Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Good evening, ladies. Welcome back to another installment. If I'm not mistaken, we finished Dush and we did not start Zohar, number 6. Okay, so let's get into Zohar, relatively short and sweet. And even most of the sheets, the little that's on here, is actually not necessarily applicable, as we'll see in a moment. Zohar, we translated as winnowing. Winnowing, there is an interesting split here. Let me just give a preface. There's an interesting split here between the two Gemaras. There is a Gemara, Mishnayis. The Mishnah was written, edited by Yehuda HaNasi in approximately the year 190 CE, 200 CE. That was in Israel. After that was compiled and put together as what we know today as the Mishnah, the next 200 to 300 years was the era of the Gemara, and the Gemara actually split into two different versions, so to speak. We have the Gemara Yerushalmi, written in Israel, and then the Gemara Bavli, written, of course, in Bavel, in what is today Iran and Iraq. So we have two different Gemaras, not well known, because generally we say Gemara, we simply refer to the Bavli, the famous Schottenstein art scroll series, and most of the Gemaras people learn are going to be the Bavli. The reason for that is it was written, there's a variety of reasons. It was written later, so it had the advantage of a little more hindsight. It was written in an easier, less terse Aramaic, and it is, for those reasons and other reasons, is considered to be more authoritative. So the Bavli, the Babylonian Gemara, again, when we just say Gemara loosely, we mean the Babylonian. But certainly the Yerushalmi is learned, and it's authoritative, and it's certainly looked to. Rabbi Zelman, for example, is finishing learning Bavli. He's about to make a Siyum, I think, shortly. He's even writing a Sefer on the comparing and contrasting the two Talmuds, which is, to say, mind-boggling is an understatement. So Yerushalmi is not well learned. I think Art Scroll right now is actually busy translating it and commenting on it. But for our purposes, why that's important for us is that once in a while we do have arguments between the conclusion of Halacha in the Bavli, in the main Talmud, versus the conclusions in the Yerushalmi. And this is one of those examples right here in living color, is this particular Malacha, and how broad is it? The Bavli understands that is more constricted, how we apply, what this malacha means is more limited, where the Yerushalmi takes, for whatever reason, takes a broader view, includes more things, so to speak, in the malacha. Generally speaking, again, we do follow the Bavli. That's a general rule. That's widely accepted, that if there is an argument, generally speaking, we'll follow the Bavli, which is what I'm going to share with you tonight. But partially because there's so little to say, I think the Sfarim do talk at least about the Yerushalmi's position in this malacha. Do people follow it? I'm not quite sure. I believe I meant to double check, but the picture book, I believe, only mentions the Bavli's less broad examples. Not that the picture book is an authoritative posek, but I think it's illustrative of what we do follow. So the definition of this malacha, with that long introduction to a definition, the definition according to the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, is separating using wind, either natural, human, or artificial. So again, the definition according to the Bavli would be separating using wind, either natural, human, or artificial. So one more time, the Bavli's definition is separating using wind, and just a little more clarity, either natural, human, or artificial. We don't care where that wind comes from, but it's specifically using wind to separate. The Yerushalmi, again, the Jerusalem Talmud, again, takes a much broader view of this malacha, and it rules that it's any dispersing, using the wind to disperse, not just to separate. And again, examples will help flush this out. But Yerushalmi says that even if it's not strictly separating, but it's dispersing something using the wind, that's also part of the malacha of Zohar. is classically, if you look at the picture book again, it's throwing the melacha previous dash was separating by force, some kind of force was separating the chaff from the wheat itself, from the kernel itself, and then you threw it in the air with a goal that the wind would come along and take the chaff away, and then right beneath you would be the heavier kernels. That was their way of. I wouldn't be surprised if it was done today in a more sophisticated way, but I wouldn't be surprised if they use wind today as well, because they are, the weight is so different to separate. So,
can you just clarify that one, sir? I think some of us are on the wrong page.
Oh.
Are we on the Zoresh page, which is the last page of...
Last page of the previous packet, yes.
Right, not the first page of the new.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so at the top it's
the same. Yes, it says Malach Vav in Zora. And I am about to, I finally got all the sheets together the way I want them, so I will be loading this up to the web, and I'll number them, so that if you do have any questions, you can certainly go to the website.
And then, yes.
What's that?
Oh, there are actually these sheets on there?
The older ones are, these are not. Finally today, I found the sheets that I was looking for, the Borer sheets. So I will, hopefully by tomorrow or the next day, have the whole packet.
Okay.
Up on the web, numbered, so in case you got confused, you know, your pages got a little out of order, you can always look there, you can certainly ask. Okay, so we're in Malach Vav Zora. So again, there is this important argument between the Babylonian and the Jerusalem Talmud, and we're going to generally follow the Babylonian. So, in applications, the peanut shell, when you take off the outer shell, and then you're left with the inner peanut shell, the blowing that thin peanut shell off of your hand and being left with the peanut, that is Zora according to both, according to the Bavli. Even according to the Bavli, you're separating, you're using your wind to separate the thin, whatever they call that, away from the peanut. That would be a prohibition on Shabbos, not something that you and I would think about, really. Not something that we classically associate with Shabbos. But that is the classic example. That's the picture book example of this malacha in our lives.
So you pick up the shell.
Cannot.
The thin.
Right.
So if it...
Cracking it open is fine. No problem at all.
And so you can't just wipe it off?
So then you could... You can certainly... You couldn't remove it by hand for the next malacha actually covers that. But blowing it off, you know, you crack the shell open, which is fine, and you throw the hard shell away, and then you've got that
red stuff.
Yeah, whatever the packaging.
You can eat that.
So you can eat it, certainly.
But
you can't blow it off your hand and then be left with a peanut. That is Zora. That's a modern day. You and I aren't busy in the field with pitchforks. That would be one of the few modern day examples of Zora. Mrs. Crone, still a question?
But you can eat it.
Certainly, yes. Yes, you can eat it, or you can just take out the peanut and leave the piece behind, and then just dump it in the garbage. That's
right,
fine too. Yeah, if you don't want to eat that thin skin, I should have looked up the official term. Again, we're getting into the next Malach Borer, which we haven't discussed yet. But yeah, that will become clearer in a few minutes. But one thing we can say clearly and unequivocally at this point is you cannot blow the thin little skin off of your hand away from the peanut. That is usher. Cannot do that. Okay. The rest, really, if you look at them, are all examples of Zora according to Yerushalmi, which we, again, do not necessarily follow la halacha. So, liquid spraying into the air, taking Febreze or something, and spraying it into a fan to disperse that throughout the room. The Bavli would say, that's fine. That's not Zora. That's not separating. That's just dispersing. The Yerushalmi, anyone who wants to be strict for the Yerushalmi, wouldn't do that. Wouldn't do that on purpose. Wouldn't go to the fan. Spritz the Febreze. That's for sure fine. Even according to Bavli, a little air current here and there, that's not the issue. If there's a real wind, again, where the wind comes from is irrelevant. But if there's a real wind, that would be, and it's dispersing whatever it is, that would be prohibited. Similarly, tablecloths and crumbs. I certainly have seen families, they clear the table and then they wrap up the tablecloth, take it to the backyard, and shake. So shaking it would not be an issue, but if it's windy and that wind is now taking your crumbs and bringing it wherever for the birds to eat, then that's not separating, but that would be dispersing. And separating would only be if you've got two items. You want one here and one there. That's the peanut case. That's the Bavli's definition. dispersing is simply everything you've got you want somewhere else, and you're using the wind to, you know, to get it there. So that would be, tablecloths again would be an example of the Yerushalmi saying don't do that. Now, if there's no wind, there's no problem. If it's a windy day and you're shaking the tablecloth and the crumbs are flying all over the place, that would be a violation of Zorah only according to the Yerushalmi. And all these follow the same example. Confetti into the wind, same thing. And there's a lot of... Yes and no. I mean, probably creates a little bit of a something. But if that wind is not really carrying away the crumbs, which I don't think it probably would.
But are you feeding the birds?
That's a good question. Unless that's really your goal, it's fine. Yeah, to take the leftover challah and to throw it outside, like you maybe would do on a Tuesday, that would be prohibited for reasons we haven't gotten to. You're not allowed to feed. I think we touched on this. You're not allowed to feed non-domesticated animals. Right, all domesticated animals you can feed, yours and someone else's, but non-domesticated animals, which obviously would include most birds, you know, if you want to feed the birds, set the feeder up for Shabbos. You can't put that feeder, you know, food up on Shabbos. I mean, certainly there's nothing wrong with, you know, we certainly want to encourage, the Gemara talks about this, not wasting food and feeding the birds. So, you want to put it in a bag and then mostly Shabbos, Sunday morning, whatever, you know, let the birds have a feast. That's wonderful, but not on Shabbos. Okay, dust out of a blanket, again, if it's windy, according to the Yerushalmi, that would be a problem. You're using the wind to carry away the dust. The dust from an old sefer or a book. The top of the book has gotten dirty, gotten dusty. Encyclopedia. You know, those kids, things that kids don't know what, you know, just have no idea what to do with them. That would be an example. If you blow, you know, you blow the dust off of the top of the sefer, according to Yerushalmi at least, that would be problematic. That would be forbidden. Because you're not separating, but you are dispersing the...
And just to clarify, you're saying, though, commonly we go by Babli. So
right.
These things you're telling us are more restrictive than what...
Than we would normally...
Would
right.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, well said. So there's definitely people who are going to say, you know, Yerushalmi says don't do it, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think pretty confident if I would ask, you know, took a survey of post-team in America, they would generally say... Yeah, that's simply not our approach. Okay, dust off clothes, really the same thing as the blanket earlier. Not sure why I even added that. Excess confectioner sugar off of a donut, blowing that off. Again, we would say that's fine. People who follow Yerushalmi would say, don't do that. You know, you can shake it off and let it fall, use gravity. The issue, the focus here is not using wind. You got the new packet?
No.
Let me get it. Is this it?
No,
this is the new. Yeah, and then there's the old.
Oh,
okay. Yes, soft clothes. Sure. Your stuff. Yes. Right. That gets very... Yeah, that gets very complicated. It's a totally different malacha, but it's good that you bring it up. The question was removing dirt from clothing, from a shirt, from a blouse, from a skirt, from pants. So that gets very, very complicated, very involved. It goes without saying, again, we're skipping a little bit ahead, but it's very, very relevant. One cannot ever on Shabbos take water to fabric. Meaning to go to the sink like you would on a Tuesday and just get that little food stain out. A common, no, we all do it. You can't do that on Shabbos. That's considering laundering. Can't do it. The question becomes dry. Can you remove dirt that's on the surface that is dry? So this is a big discussion, a big dispute, and it boils down to a problem. Meaning, if it is something which is very superficial, piece of potato from the chalent, you know, landed on your lap, you can remove the potato. You know, please don't walk around with it the whole Shabbos. But the stain that it leaves behind, on the other hand, that's absorbed in the fabric, that's a whole different story. Removing anything that's absorbed in fabric is actually a problem. Which, I'll never forget, one of my rebbeim years ago said, what happens if your hat blows off, if you're a hat wearer and your hat blows off and it gets dusty? He looked at most of yeshiva boys who struggle with this issue. So he said, you put it back on. Now, that was his way of telling us, you can't, normally you brush it off, you get the dust off, why should you look, you know. But once things get absorbed into a fabric, you really have to leave them where they are. And this is actually, I was having this conversation with Rabbi Kushkerman last year, I think it was, and it's even stricter for Ashkenazim in this case than it is for Sfaradim, just the way the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah look at this. This is slightly different. So when we get there, we'll get to more depth about this issue. But
let's not being absorbed into the fabric.
Yeah, certainly if it's very on the surface and you just pluck it off, even though there might be cases where that's a problem also, but generally that's okay. If it's really not absorbed. But anything absorbed, which certainly most stains, would be a problem.
Is that clothing or is that everything? Like if something spills on the carpet, for example?
Yeah, anything which absorbs, any fabric.
You're just a silly little put on the...
So you can... Well, you can't. You certainly can't, you know, in any way, shape, or form, launder it, clean it, make it
clean. So you can't spray
clean.
Anything on it?
So, no. Spraying something on it would be out. Could you throw a towel or napkins on something and just let it absorb? I believe the answer is yes. But you're leaving, you know, the stain is still there, just not as wet.
What about vinegar?
As was before.
A sage, the wine of Shabbos spilled. Can I drop vinegar?
No.
And towel?
Mm-mm. Can't use it. You can't I mean, if it's a non-porous surface, a counter, a table, a floor, something like that, you can't clean it up. And even then, it gets complicated because, you know, there's certain porous surfaces. Grape juice is left on the counter long enough, it will stain. And getting that stain out is a problem. But generally, a non-porous surface you can clean up. Counters, all that kind of stuff. So if it means pouring water on the counter, like we discussed before, or in Srita, how to get that off, that would be fine. But once it's absorbed into the surface of the material, you can't remove it on Shabbos. It certainly can't apply in liquids.
What about salt?
That's a good question. I need to look into that. I think it's a problem, but I have to look into that. Certainly if it's normal, right, salt only schleps things out. If that is a normal way of, even if it's abnormal in some ways. I don't know why I don't remember ever seeing that discussed. Okay, and some homework for me. Yeah, it's a very good question. Okay, let me just jot that down. Okay. Okay, so let's finish this piece up. that's supposed to say blowing dirt off a fruit, by the way. A little typo there. So blowing dirt off of a fruit, again, using wind to disperse, to clean, in this case, according to Yerushalmi, would be a problem. Our approach is really not to worry about that at all.
It is permitted?
Yeah, we would say that's permitted. Yeah. And then last but not least, spraying a water gun into the wind would be the same as one of the first issues, liquid spraying into the air, same exact thing. According to the Bavli, it's fine. According to Shalmi, one would avoid it. So, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, of these 10 applications, really only one applies to us, I think it is instructive for us to realize that different, you know, I keep saying this point, but it's important to make again and again, different Jews have different approaches to different issues. And we should not be dismissive, whether they are stricter or whether they are more lenient than us, of other people's approaches. There's, you know, there was a time when one of my kids would ask, you know, could that custom really exist? I would say definitively, no way, can't never heard of it. And I've learned, as I've matured a little bit, that that's not, you know, that's a dangerous thing to say, unless it's contrary to halacha. And even then, there's some customs which are contrary, seemingly contrary. There's a lot of different things out there. There's a lot of very, very diverse customs and approaches, and, you know, we should know what we are supposed to do and do it, but we shouldn't be, we should appreciate the flavor that is halacha. Okay, any other questions about Zohar before we move on to Borer? Okay, so Borer, ladies, very much by contrast to Zohar. Zohar is, as we just saw, not very applicable, doesn't apply to our life much at all, even in more agricultural times, was not super duper, wasn't central. Borer is, we're going to see momentarily, is very much the opposite. It's one of the most important malachas to learn and to understand. And you notice that this is, I have written here, it's abridged, only because when I taught this most recently in these particular sheets, we were running out of time in the year. So I decided to, I could not let them graduate without learning Borah. That would just not be, I couldn't sleep at night. So I made it as short as it possibly could be. But don't be fooled, and we'll spend a little more time than we have here. The applications are almost limitless. I mean, just so much of what we do can be affected by this malacha. So the translation we said was sorting, or selecting. I think we gave both the first time around. Sorting and selecting. And the definition is any selecting from or sorting of assorted mixtures or combinations of types. A little bit of a mouthful. So again, any selecting from or sorting of assorted mixtures or combinations of types. And one more time. Absolutely. Three of the charm. Any selecting from or sorting of assorted mixtures.
A what?
Assorted. Oh. Assorted mixtures or combinations of types. There is a lot in that short little definition. So, just to clarify, you know, the two verbs here, selecting and sorting, we'll soon see. Selecting out means of this mixture of 100 things, it could be you're only interested in one. And depending on how you do it, as we'll soon see, would violate the malacha of Borah. And sorting. You've got all 100 and you want 60 over here and 40 over there. That also is a violation. Although, in our mind, sorting and selecting may not be, you know, really the same at all. But those are both potentially problematic and forbidden on Shabbos.
And what is the name in Hebrew for this?
This is Borer. This is, in English we'd say B-O-R-E-R, just to transliterate.
Oh, I have a story for that.
Sorting and selecting. Okay, so the challenge of this malacha, ladies, really is twofold. The first point here is, number one, it's simply hard to avoid. It's hard to avoid. This malacha is very pervasive. It affects a lot of different areas. It is not limited to food. Zareya, Charesh, some of the malachas we discussed earlier are specifically around agriculture and things that can grow or will grow or whatever. Ma'amer is about food. This is not. Borer is everything and anything can be affected by this malacha. Shoes, clothes, I mean, we'll talk about different examples, but everything can be affected. So the challenge of this malacha, number one, is it's hard to avoid. It's very pervasive. And number two, it's hard to master. Just understanding the halacha is not simple. There's a lot of detail, and there's a lot of thin lines that we have to try and draw. It's not a not an easy halacha to really master. So you've got, you know, both of those things working against us. It's everywhere, and yet, you know, even if you're a master, knowing exactly what to do is not always so simple. So it is a very challenging malacha. Okay, and then mixture of types. So I want to talk about mixed, and I want to talk about types under this heading. So mixed together means mixed together. If it's two clearly distinguishable items, that's not a mixture. And Borah does not apply in any way, shape, or form. So if you've got chicken over here and you've got rice over there, they're really separate and distinct entities in your plate, their Borah just does not apply. All the rules that we're about to discuss are irrelevant because they're not mixed. You got... Ah, so once you start mixing them, Chinese food on the other hand, when you got the chicken and the rice all mixed together, or you cut your chicken, then already you've got all the rules of Borah do apply. So again, just going with this definition, we talked about selecting and sorting mixtures and combinations. It has to be a mixture or a combination for the Borah to apply at all. If there's no mixture, there's no Borah. And of course, depending on how big the thing is, you know, if this is one of those thin lines, if it looks to you, to you know, the average person, as a mixture, it's a mixture, and the rules apply. If it's not, I mean, this, you know, this phone and this watch are clearly not mixed. They're not touching. They're not close. Not that touching is really part of the definition, but if it's not mixed, it's not a problem.
Okay, so you've got fried rice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mixture. On another plate, you've got chicken pieces, and you've got rice that you put on the plate. And you want to eat it by eating the chicken and the rice together. Can you not do that?
Sure. Yes. Combining is never the problem. It's always sorting or selecting that's the problem.
So in the fried rice, there were peas and carrots, and you only wanted the carrots.
Exactly. Well, only wanting the carrots is not the problem. If you don't want the carrots, then we're jumping ahead. But
okay.
That's always the issue. The finicky eater is a really big problem with this. Right. So that would be something we'd have to figure out how to deal with. There is certainly a way around that, and we'll talk about that. But that's now already we're hitting in what is borer. Borer would be taking out those carrots. If you don't, I mean, again, we're jumping ahead a little bit. But yes. Yes. Well, I'm trying to avoid answering these questions only because we don't know enough to. So. Again, the beginning point here is it has to be mixed. Otherwise, there's no conversation. The whole issue of borer does not start. So it could be a mixture of foods, as we've just discussed. It could be socks. It could be shoes. It could be svarim. It could be books. You've got a pile of books together. Sorting and selecting those books would have to follow the rules of borer. So any mixture, again, makes no difference. It's edible, it's not edible. It makes no difference. Any mixture of things, the rules of borer would, in fact, apply. And then, types. It has to be a mixture of different types. So that if you go to, you go to a shelf and there are all art scroll, bad example. They're all blue stone chumashim. And let's just assume there's really no, and there probably is, no significant difference between all those blue stone chumashim. I mean, there's just not. One's a little older, one's a little newer, one's tape, but there's really no significant difference. That's not considered a mixture of types. You don't have to worry about the rules of borer when you go to the shelf and pick out, one stone chumash from 20 stone chumashim. It just doesn't. Or these chairs, they're all identical, so to speak. We can all find differences, but they're basically considered. The only time the rules of borer would apply is if it's a mixture of different types. You got blue socks and pink socks, and you want, then the rules of borer apply. Yeah. Yes.
Some of the Siddurim are, have large scripts.
Yes.
So that they're, easier to use. But they're basically...
Yeah, that's why I kind of stopped myself. Because just looking at the shelf, you've got three or four different kinds of Siddurim.
Right.
And that already would be different types.
Okay.
They're all Siddurim. And this is one of those gray areas. At what point do we call them different?
Okay. So that, you pick one out over another one.
Right, so all I'm saying right now, all I'm committing to right now is you have to follow the rules of borer.
Which means
if you go to that cell behind you of Siddurim, and there's, there's five Siddurim and three different types of Siddurim. There's the new Wasserman, whatever it's called, and the old, RCA, and you got a transliterated one, and you got a Svardi one, and you got, right, those are all different. The halacha would certainly view those as different. You'd have to follow the rules of borer in selecting one of those Siddurim. Again, what those rules are or not. Okay, so again, I'm not committing yet to what that means. But the rules would apply. Whereas a stone like that shelf behind you, all stone chumashim, the rules of bar don't apply.
And then it also applies in reverse when you're putting things back?
No. Well, only if you are selecting when you put them back.
Right.
Meaning,
right, so
yes,
like
if you've got that's, yes, the rules of borer do apply there.
Okay.
Yes.
Whatever those
magical rules are, those rules would apply, yes. If you've got a bunch, in yeshivas, this is a very relevant issue. The boys are learning, Shabbos afternoon, and they can have 25 svarim out, and putting those back, they certainly have to follow the rules of borer. Yes. Assuming they're mixed.
They probably just don't put them
out. That's the excuse. Yeah. Mrs. Krohn has been teaching for long enough to know the excuses used by students. Okay, so again, so we got mixtures. It must be a mixture in order to be a problem, and they have to be a mixture of types. A mixture of the sames, don't count. It's just irrelevant to the laws of Borer. So, let me give a couple examples. Going back to mixed together. Something like a large piece, you know, a sizable piece of chicken. I'm not talking about a little sliver. But a piece of chicken in a soup. And let's say chicken soup. So you got liquid, you know, you got broth, and you got a distinguishable piece of chicken. Those are not considered mixed. And therefore, one can, the rules of Borer, I almost got myself in trouble here, the rules of Borer do not apply in that case, because the liquid and the solid, I mean, they're touching each other, this chicken is wet because of the soup, the chicken, and it's one thing even, you cooked it on before Shabbos as chicken soup, but they're not considered mixed. Two solids would, two liquids is not relevant, but because one's a solid and one's a liquid and they're clearly distinguishable, even though they're touching, that's why this is a great example, even though they're touching, and you and I call it chicken soup, it's one entity, we don't look at that as mixed. Now again, little pieces of veggies or little pieces of chicken floating in soup would be considered part of the soup. So the rules would apply. But if it's a sizable piece of potato, sizable piece of chicken, sizable piece of whatever, and again, what is sizable is, you know, it's hard to take out your ruler and say. But it's not considered mixed, and therefore the rules of Borer would not apply. Yes, ma'am?
What if you add, like, soup nuts or whatever you call it, crumbs?
Right.
If you add crunchies to the soup at the table.
Right.
So
adding is not, no issue.
But then once it's in there, it's mixed.
Those would be considered mixed, most likely, yes. Yes, once they're in, if you want to get them out, that's separate. Then the rules would apply. No, that's not a problem. But there your intention then is to get the soup, and you're not separating or selecting. Right, exactly. You better have wanted to have done that. I mean, again, there's ways around that. But okay, and then types. You know, there's a big conversation in halacha as to exactly what's considered types. So, for example, hamantaschen. If you've got you're in a bakery, not in Atlanta, you're in New York, you're in Baltimore, and you're in a bakery, and there's big hamantaschen, which sell for, you know, whatever, $2, and then the small hamantaschen, that sell for $1. So those are considered two distinct types. They were made specifically to be large and small, different price, different rack, different everything. Whereas at home, if you're just making hamantaschen and you're really not out to make, you know, some a little bigger, some a little smaller, you're not so terribly particular, we would not consider those to be a mixture of types. And the rules would not apply.
Different flavors
already would be considered different types, yes. Yes. Certainly chocolate and raspberry would be.
So the size, the size is one condition.
Setting, yes. Yes, that's what's confusing about this. The context sometimes does impact the halacha. Because again, at home you could have the same size hamantaschen, but you really don't care. It wasn't by design. It wasn't on purpose. It wasn't. I mean, assuming we're making assumptions here, but assuming that's the case, then it's not considered different. These chocolate big hamantaschen or those chocolate small hamantaschen are the same. Whereas again, in a bakery, it would be distinct. You have a question?
No. So one of the three conditions is size.
Size could be a type. Yes. I'm trying to give examples of type.
We haven't
started. Yeah, no, the three conditions we haven't gotten to. Yes, thank you for clarifying. So, yeah, we're still in, and I realize this doesn't all fit, but we're still in mixtures
so
of types.
If you're at home,
mm-hmm.
and someone serves a plate of assorted hamantaschen,
right?
You can pick which one you do want, right? Can you pick?
We'll still find out. The rules there would again, if the only distinction between all those hamantaschen is size, and the size is basically irrelevant.
Yeah, you've got apricot, you've got strawberry.
Oh, those are types. Yes, and we're assuming they're all on the same plate, and they're mixed. So that would be a mixture of types. Certainly, flavors is types, and then the rules do apply. Yes.
So, the rules do apply, whatever those rules are.
We're getting there.
That's where the conditions.
Yes, exactly right. Let me just give one more example, I think. Okay, one more example, ladies, of types. which I think again illustrates the point a little bit more, and that is different kinds of peanuts. The example I have written down here are raw versus roasted. I don't know if raw is the right term, but you know, your regular peanut versus roasted peanuts. Those would be considered, even though they're peanuts, and it's not as different, I would argue, than a chocolate hamantaschen versus a, you know, raspberry hamantaschen. Maybe closer to each other, these peanuts, but that those are still considered a significant difference. They were prepared differently, they taste differently, different people have preferences, one for the other, you know, one over the other. So that's, even though they're both peanuts, that would in fact be considered a mixture of types if they're mixed together, and the rules would apply. Say someone presents you a bowl of different kinds of peanuts. Okay, that's kind of a strange example. But, I mean, I would give an example of, you know, raisins and peanuts. Yeah, different kinds of nuts, jelly beans, raisins and peanuts, you know, raisins and almonds or whatever. All these would certainly, clearly be considered a mixture of types. Okay, enough examples. Although we can go on and on and on. The three conditions, the rules you've been waiting for, are finally here. Okay, so the truth is, I'm going to give you the Hebrew terms. Again, without a blackboard, it's a little bit hard. They are listed out for you on the next page. I wanted to, when I wrote this up, I wanted to, you know, break it down and give you the rules first. And I had the luxury of a bulletin board, of a whiteboard. But if you want to simply, so that I don't confuse, if you look at the next page, you've got the three written out for you there. Roman numeral number one is Biyad. There should be a little duggish, a little dot in that vase. Biyad. And I'll just read them for a second here. Roman numeral number two is Ochel Mitoch Psoles. And then the third, towards the bottom, is Miyad.
Is what?
Is Miyad.
Viyad?
Miyad. The very bottom there. Miyad. Miyad. So,
and the number,
we're going to need you to say the
second
one. Yes, please.
Oh, yes. I guess I kind of ran through that quickly. So let's forget, you know, if you don't, we can certainly just move to the second page here. So, biyad, ladies, means, with literally means with your hand. With your hand. And what that really means, is, one is not allowed to use an instrument, a utensil, that is designed to separate. One of the three conditions of Borer is you can't use an instrument, a utensil of any sort that's designed for separating. So, biyad again means with your hand, but that's...
Sorry, biyad?
Biyad. Like, yeah, B, how do you say that in English? B-E-Y-A-D.
B-E-Y-A-D. A-D.
Yep. That literally means with your hand, but again, that's not really the legal definition. The legal definition is one is not allowed, one is prohibited from using a vessel, a utensil, a tool that is designed for borer, for separating. That would be prohibited to use. That, of course, would be muksa, going back to muksa, like a colander. Yeah, we'll go through a bunch of examples. Strainer is one of the examples here. That is the first condition. So, no, you can't, again, biyad means you can't use a tool or utensil that's designed for separating, to separate. You can't use it for that purpose. So, yeah, a clear example, the last of the four there would be a strainer. A colander, a strainer, give me some other examples here. A slotted spoon, right? Slotted spoon, you should write that example down. Very important example. Slotted spoon. All those types of things which are designed specifically to separate so that you go into Quality Kosher or Publix or whatever, slotted spoon is used to serve out the coleslaw specifically so you get less of the liquid. That's great on Tuesday. That's usher on Shabbos. Can't use that because that spoon is designed to separate on Shabbos. You can't do that.
What about like a grapefruit spoon as opposed to a regular spoon?
Grapefruit spoon meaning it's a solid spoon but it's got the sharp on the side.
Designed to specifically
no problem.
Pull out.
Okay. No problem. No problem at all. Yeah.
So in a sink.
Yes.
There sometimes a strainer
mm-hmm.
to keep food from going down the non-disposal side of the sink?
Yes.
That can't be
that
done.
That is a great question. That is okay. I just don't remember why.
Well, you're separating out isn't desirable. You don't need to eat it.
No, when it's for not eating, but it also keeps it from going into the drain.
Right.
That's its purpose. Is it just it's there to separate it from plumbing.
Right.
But then you're getting into the issue of whether you're separating something desirable.
That's the next. That's the very next point. I need to research that. I don't recall. That's permissible. I just don't remember why. Because on the surface, it should be prohibited. I think they post can throw together a bunch of different reasons why that's
it's okay.
not your intention, and it's just kind of there on its own. And
because of purpose or intention.
Yeah, it's not
your intention.
Meaning it's your you put it there with intent. Clearly, you bought it. You put it there. But when you're washing something, you don't. You know, it's not like a conscious process. But I need to research that more. I'll get back to you on that. Okay, so let's go through some of these examples. So again, the slotted spoon is a good thing to add to your example, your list over here. Strainer, it's the last one on this list, but it's a great example to start with because it's more obvious. You've got, I don't know, you've got whatever you've got, and you normally would use a strainer to strain it. That would be prohibited on Shabbos. To use a strainer to, you know, to do anything really would be prohibited on Shabbos. Now, to go back to the beginning of this list, to use a knife to peel a fruit, for example, peel an apple, whatever, a kid doesn't like an apple skin, that actually is perfectly fine. Because this is one of those examples where things get very gray. Even though that's not your hand. Even though that you can't do that with your hand. But that we look at the knife as a generic tool. It's not designed to separate. It's not designed to be. It's not a peeler, which is the next example. One of the next examples, which is prohibited, it's a knife. You happen to be using it to separate the skin from the apple. That actually is perfectly fine. That's actually perfectly fine. To remove, yes, great example. That would be actually that's coming up. So hold that for a minute. So we get to number two. Let's stay with the utensils. So I apologize for not going in order, but knives should be contrasted with peelers. Again, peeler is designed specifically by the manufacturer as a separating device. The goal is to separate the, in this case, the apple, so that you cannot use. Cannot use a peeler on Shabbos to do the same apple, to clean to separate the same skin from the same apple with a knife is fine, because it's a generic, we view it as a generic utensil, versus a peeler, which is not a generic, it's a very specific utensil designed to do borer.
So a knife can also be used on Shabbos to peel the skin on a cucumber if you want.
Correct.
But you can't use a peeler
to do the same act. That's right.
Okay. You could take a knife and scrape the carrot skin off, but you can't use a peeler.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Yeah.
But that's cooking.
Well, I mean, cooking would be limited. We'll get to cooking. Cooking is limited strictly to heat. So
okay.
That would not be... We do tend to throw it all together, but that would, you know, halachically not be... Okay.
Yes,
that's one of the 5 points, and that's why it's an example. The result is the same. The result is the same. And the activity is not even that different, the act that you're doing, but we do view it very differently because one of the rules is this concept of biyad. As soon as you use a utensil that's designed for this purpose, it's a borer machine, can't use it. And of course it becomes muksa. So peelers and muksa, strainers and muksa, all those types of things are going to be muksa.
But a knife that does the same thing, a knife is designed to do anything, so it's okay?
Correct. I mean, there's ways to use a knife that's borer. We'll talk about that later. But under this heading, at least, a knife is not considered a problem, a violation of biyad. A peeler, rather, is.
And when you're saying lid cover, the hold lets the liquid come out.
So a lid cover, Yes, exactly. To use a lid cover to, let's say, strain soup, to sort the soup. So the liquid, you know, liquid comes out and the solids stay in. That actually is also discussed quite a bit in the poskim, and the basic thrust of the poskim is not to do that. That here we view, even this is where it's, again, very gray. Here, the lid cover clearly is not designed to separate. I mean, it's a lid cover. It's designed to keep the, you know, keep the heat in, whatever it is. But we do view that process as involving a utensil. I mean, it's hard to explain it, because where do you draw that line between, you know, you couldn't peel the, in other words, the litmus test here is not could you have done it without the utensil. That's clearly not, because you can't peel the apple without a knife. And we allow that. So in other words, it's not simply, is this utensil simply helpful, but you could have done it otherwise. That's not where the bar is set. We allow certain utensils, like a knife, to peel an apple, whereas we would not allow the lid cover to hold back the solids in the soup. Yes, ma'am.
The lid cover, does it apply only to pots, or when you open a can and you strain, can you pour out the liquid?
Same thing, really. I mean, we'll see there's ways around some of these things. But, this is strong, can't wait. Meaning we'll see, you know, we'll see. Okay. Yeah, I mean, those types of utensils really need more, you know, whole class in themselves. What, how to use, when to use. But, without question, one thing we can say unequivocally is something which is designed specifically for sorting, out. Can't use it, can't touch it. Well, you can touch it, you can't move it.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Can opener? As you mean?
Open like a can?
Yeah, that, right, that would be under a different malacha. Meaning there we don't view that as separating, it's under cutting. But the short answer is a mechanical one you can use. How you can use it is a whole other question. But, you know, certainly electronic, obviously you can't.
Right.
But mechanical, you know, the old guys, that's fine.
You're making a
vessel.
So
yes, very good. Yes. I was going to say, Mrs. Scrooge has a son who will learn yeshiva. So. Okay. Okay, so that's, again, the, you know, the whole picture is mosaic is still being built.
What
so.
About you know those can openers where you used to make like a triangle on one
right.
side and a triangle on the other? Can
that's
you
not a.
That?
I mean, that gets into other issues, but
like to poke the hole in the thing before blah blah blah.
Right. So the short answer is no. Most folks around here would probably say fine. I mean, Rabbi Kushkerman would, Rabbi Freeman does. Most folks would say that's fine. There are people, like Mrs. Crum was saying, would put a hole in the side, but we'll get there. That's a whole other malacha. Okay.
You said something about socks earlier.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So can you not, from a drawer full of socks, can you not pick out...
Where are you from, Mrs. Crum?
Boston.
Back.
Can you not pick out the blue ones to go with your pants that you're wearing that day or your shirt you're wearing that day?
We'll get there. That's next meeting. We better finish, because otherwise everyone's going to go home, and Shabbos, you're not going to be able to move.
I know, it's going to be a sad day for us.
I can't
believe
that we're doing this. I cannot tell my children we're getting there.
Well, I'm talking to a much different, you know, much more mature audience. An audience is willing to wait for the punchline. Okay, so this is really the point you've all been waiting for. And maybe next time when I teach this, I'll put it first. So there's less stress and tension in the room. So the second point, ladies, is ochel mitoch psoles. Ochel mitoch psoles. Ochel is a word that we're all familiar with. Ochel, yes. Ochel means food, literally.
Ochel, me what?
Mitoch. Mitoch is from.
Mitoch.
Psolet or psoles is psoles should be, is translated as refuse. Yeah, number two. Roman number two. So it's literally food from refuse or from garbage. Is literally the translation of that phrase. Ochel mitoch psoles would be food from garbage, from that what you do not want. Right, good stuff, exactly. So more, you know, in our lingo would be the good stuff from the bad stuff. We certainly do not mean, the Gemara uses this, you know, it's a, certainly coming off of a food paradigm, but it is not, as I said before, not limited to food. It means anything which is good, taking it from bad. That is requirement number two. It's the most important, most relevant, I should say, of the three. And it is what one must do in order for, I mean, all of these are what you must do. You must do biyad. You must use your hands. You can't use the strainers. So ochel mitzvah psalos, again, is what one must do in order for this to follow the rules, to do it permissibly. One must take what they want and leave behind what they don't want. Now, just to define a little bit further, when we say psalos, when we say what you don't want, what we termed before as bad, it doesn't really mean bad. It's not necessarily rotten or smelly or whatever. It's simply what I don't want now. Psalos is simply defined as what I don't want right this minute. So, to go back to the example of mixed nuts we've talked about before, you've got peanuts and cashews. And you're right now in the mood for cashews. The only way to eat the cashews would be to take the cashews, which in this case is easy because there's going to be less cashews than peanuts. You would not be allowed to remove the peanuts and be left with a bowl of cashews and then eat the cashews. That would be a violation of this, you know, condition number two of borer. Or you've got raisins and peanuts, let's say. So you want to separate them. You want a bowl of raisins you'll eat tomorrow. You'll put them in your breakfast. And a bowl of peanuts. You can't do that. You must, that's the difference between selecting and sorting. Sorting would be, you know, you're making two different piles out of this whole thing. Or selecting would be taking what you don't want. Either one's a violation. The only way to eat a mixture of that sort would be to take what you want now.
You
can pick out the type. There's a mixture of types. You can take out the type that you want right now.
So if you want salad and shabbos,
yes.
I'm allergic to carrots.
Right.
So how do I get around?
Okay, excellent question. And I don't have this here. I'm glad you asked that. Thank you, Alison, for bringing that up. So the best way around that, and you can put this on the back, ladies, is to find someone at the table that wants them. That's the best trick around it. Exactly. So you can... You can, you know, announce at the table if you want, would anyone like my carrots? And then you can pick out the carrots, and you're giving them to that person, not because you're getting rid of them, even though that's your intention, but really because you're giving them, you're selecting them, you know, you're taking what you want for somebody else. That's perfectly fine.
If I were never to her, and I were to say, I'll take them.
Sure. She can give them to you. Yes. Now, you don't have to finish your plate. You don't have to lick your plate. You know, we're not talking about, you know, you can't simply, it can't be a ruse and then just discard them. It has to be, you know, you want the carrots and you're going to eat them. If you leave five behind, no one's going to, you know.
Okay.
But that's the best way around it. So for the example brought up earlier about the rice, the Chinese rice, you certainly could pick out the, you know, your kids don't like the peas, so pick out the peas and eat them. You know, add them to your rice. That's perfectly fine. Even though the motivator is to get them off of the kids' plate, so the kid will eat the rice.
But that's also the carrots. They all said no. Because
right. So then your only way out is to eat around them.
Can you just get the peas right. And carrots? Couldn't you just eat the peas?
Yeah. Yeah, you can always eat around them, eat what you want. That's always fine. But if you do want to clean, you know, get rid of the icky stuff, you could... There you go. Husbands are good garbage disposal. They'll eat almost anything.
Start eating from a bag of something. Like, say, a bag of popcorn or something.
Right.
And there's a burnt piece.
Right.
And you pick it up accidentally because, you know.
You're just grabbing,
yeah.
And it ends up in your hand. So you can certainly put the popcorn in your mouth, and then you're left with the burnt, and just throw it out. That's fine. That's fine. Because there, again, you're just, you know, you're not intentionally picking out the bad. You're eating the good, and you happen to have them left, but that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
You could not go through the bag of popcorn and pick out the burnt pieces, which, you know, you might want to do on a Saturday night. You cannot do that on Shabbos. Yeah.
But with trail mix, a mixture of things,
And I like certain things.
Lavender.
Somebody else likes certain things.
Right.
Just eat what, eat the things that I.
That you like.
That I like.
Right.
It's okay.
Yep.
It's not like I'm picking.
Right. Well, you know, you're allowed to pick as long as you're picking what you want now.
Okay.
Yep. And we'll talk about what now is. That's the next one, which we're not going to get to today.
Pick what you want, leave the rest. Nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, if you're with someone else and they like that, so you can, then you can pick them out specifically here. And you think that's fine as long as they're planning on eating them
okay.
Soonish. Okay. Okay, I actually do have that point in my notes. Great. Now, one more point, ladies. Major leniency, and that is called siluk. Siluk, lasalek, if you're familiar with the word, means to remove. To siluk means to remove.
Siluk.
Yeah.
Jane.
Well, see, Jane, run. Okay, so siluk means to remove. The definition really would be removing to gain access. Removing something to gain access. So this is a leniency, but it definitely makes things a little more complicated. That is to say, if you go to the refrigerator and you've got the orange juice blocking access to the milk, you're allowed to remove the, assuming this is a mixture, and you know, the kind of mixed, you know, let's just make that assumption. So you're certainly allowed to remove the orange juice to get to the milk. Because your goal, now that everyone got this straight, I'm messing it all up, right? Because your goal is not to sort or select what's in the fridge, meaning to go into the fridge and start playing around with everything and all the, you know, the organic is over here and all that. No, that you can't do. Start arranging the fridge. But to, if something's in your way and you want to get to the thing behind it, removing that thing in front of in the way is not considered borer. Your goal is simply different. Your goal is not to make this a different mixture or, you know, raisins over here and peanuts over there. That's prohibited. But you simply can't get to the item. So, for example, if you've got a, you know, going back to our bowl of raisins, they're all lying, you know, there's a whole bunch of raisins on top and the peanuts are on the bottom, and you want to get to the peanuts. You are allowed to, you know, move the peanuts, move the raisins away to get to those peanuts.
Your hand or the spoon?
Either one. Either one. You couldn't, if there's some kind of utensil designed for that, you couldn't use it. But, certainly with your hand, spoon, anything like that, not specifically, you could move away the top to get to the bottom. You got a bunch of oranges on top of apples. You can remove those oranges and take an apple. That's not considered borer.
To say that, helping that husband said, my ring fell into a crack and I moved the whole thing and Charles to get it. And he says, you are rearranging and this.
Yeah, no, to get to the, this leniency says that that's not true. If you're not, certainly if your goal is not, is to get to the ring, and you're just moving stuff away, out of the way to get to the ring, that's fine.
Yeah,
you couldn't then, once you're done and you made a big mess, you couldn't.
But I move also the floor. I put out the floor.
Oh, so that's a separate problem. that might be from a bone. Yeah, that's a separate problem. You can talk, we'll talk about it later. But
so back to, if you're eating a salad and you don't want the carrot, you can, and but you want the lettuce that's under it, you can move that carrot out of the way.
If the carrot's truly, it has, the litmus test is this in the way? So most salads, you know, it's hard to argue that. I guess those layer salads, and you want the stuff at the bottom. You know, the chickpeas are lying at the bottom. That's what really, then you can. Yeah, but, I mean, if they're really in the way, then yes, you can move them out of the way. But no, you can't use that as a ruse to, you know, I don't like the carrots. So generally, you know, it has to truly be in the way. And your only reason to move it is because it's in the way. And then you get through it. So which is why you can peel fruit. Which is why you can take chicken. And a lot of people just don't like, for health reasons or whatever, kids don't like the skin on chicken. You can remove the skin from the chicken because we consider that siluk. You're not fixing this mixture. You're not fixing up this you are simply getting to the meat of the chicken. That actually is permissible. What other examples do I have?
Like a shelf of toys, moving one toy to
mm-hmm.
the other.
Yep. Yep. So again, to arrange them, you know, all the Fisher Price over there, no way. But to move them out of the way to get to the one behind it is perfectly fine. Yep. Yes, ma'am.
Question. Normally, with some women, if they go to the bathroom and they come out, they wash their hands.
Mm-hmm.
So, the ring is still on their hand. So why is it, like a halakha thing that when they go to wash their hands or before, you know,
before bread?
On Kiddush, why do they take their rings off and put it down? But if they go to the bathroom and come out, they just wash their hands.
They wouldn't, right. So the maybe one day we'll get to these halachos properly, but to when washing ritually, you're purifying your hand, there is an issue of having a chatzitza. Chatzitza is separating, like a barrier between the water and the hand. So that's why men, women who commonly wear rings, you take them off before they wash. Whereas the bathroom is not, you know, it's not an issue. A halacha requires you to wash. It's not just, you know, germs, but the halachic requirement to wash after the bathroom is not the same. That's why we don't use a cup, anything like that.
Is there something that if you always wear your ring, you don't have to take it off?
Yes. If, for example, if you're kneading dough or something like that, you just always wear it, then we view it as part of your hand almost,
so
and you would not.
You don't really do it until
you're
done.
Right.
You would still have to take it off, say, to go to the mikvah. So what would
there, we're much stricter. Theoretically, if a person forgot afterwards, they, you know, and they truly never take it off, you know, a rabbi would probably say, don't worry about it. But there, we're much, much stricter because of the, you know, the severity of mikvah. Okay.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.